This podcast series for people living with tube feeding is brought to you by The Beat from Nutritia. This information is intended for people who are tube feeding at home, their families and their carers, including those registered on Nutritia Homeward. In this mini-series, we have partnered with Helen Hines. Helen is a dietitian specialising in home enteral nutrition in Sheffield. She is a member of the British Dietetic Association and also on the committee for the Parenteral and Enteral Nutritional Specialist Group. You will hear from both healthcare professionals and people who have experience living with tube feeding, and we will cover a range of topics, including what is tube feeding, how to talk to others about your feeding tube, and where to find out more information about tube feeding. This podcast series is all about supporting you with tube feeding at home. The information contained in this podcast is not intended to replace the advice or recommendations of healthcare professionals. Please consult with a qualified medical professional for any healthcare concerns or medical advice.
Hello and welcome back to episode 3 of the Tube Feeding at Home podcast. Today we will be hearing from people who have lived experience of tube feeding at home. I'm going to start off by introducing our two speakers. So we have Olivia, who is an 18-year-old student who is studying at Lincoln University. She is currently studying English and drama. Olivia had a feeding tube placed from the age of 6 weeks to age 11 for severe reflux, at which point she had her feeding tube removed. Olivia then had another feeding tube placed at the age of 16 to help support her fluid intake. We also have Andy. So Andy had a feeding tube placed during his treatment for throat cancer. He has since had his feeding tube removed. But Andy reflects on how invaluable the tube feed was during his time of treatment and shares some experiences on how he feeds now the feeding tube has been removed. So welcome to you both to the podcast. How are you both feeling?
Good, yeah, looking forward to this.
Yeah, I'm quite excited.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, we're really grateful to have you both here and we really can't wait to share your experiences and your reflections on your tube feeding journey. I have no doubt that it'll be really helpful for those listening today. So to start off, it'd be really helpful to take us back to your experiences of when a tube feed was introduced to yourself. So Olivia, we know that you had a feeding tube from a very young age, so it'll be really interesting to hear from your reflections of growing up with a feeding tube and then also your experiences as a 16-year-old having to reconsider having a tube placed again. How did you feel when that was the idea of having a feeding tube was introduced as a 16-year-old?
I think because I remember it all very, very vividly. Mm-hmm. In a travelodge and I couldn't eat an egg. It was as simple as that. And I remember then going into the hospital maybe like a week later because it got so bad that I couldn't have any fluid whatsoever. I remember just having really bad sinking feeling in my stomach and I remember texting my friend being like, I feel like this might happen again. I feel like a tube might be at the end of all of this. And it wasn't very nice at the start of it because I'd feel like I'd work quite hard when I was 11 to manage to get my tube out in the first place and have more fluid and try keep on top of it as well as I can and you know manage to actually get it taken out in the first place. So it was really unpleasant when I found out that I'd have to get an NG just because there was no other way for me to get fluid in.
So, Olivia, for those listening who aren't familiar with the term NG, that's a nasogastric feeding tube, and we explored that in episode 1. So what Olivia's talking about is a tube that's placed through the nose and into the stomach to allow fluids in Olivia's case, or it could be used for medications or feeds. So, Olivia, you explained there, it sounds like there was a lot of emotions and you were reaching out to your friends and probably family on hand to support you through those difficult discussions and decisions. Could you explain to us what professionals were involved in these discussions and how they supported you to make your decision?
Well, my mum, mainly. My paediatrician is maybe one of the most lovely women I've ever met in my entire life. And she was very much involved. She was the first person that we rang where we knew there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And also the nurses and doctors where I was admitted into hospital, who were kind of the ones that said, look, it doesn't look like there's going to be any other way to get around this, especially not in the short term, because they really didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them were very, very supportive and very supportive of that. And they mm-hmm. were very straightforward explaining that it's not mm-hmm. going to be nice, but it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I will always really, really appreciate, is how all the nurses and the doctor and my mum was very blunt, really, mm-hmm. in telling me all of that.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a lot of a really good support network around you, Olivia, and I think that's really important. Can you explain to me then, when you did have the tube placed, Olivia, I know you had the NG, the nasogastric tube, and then you now have a tube directly into your stomach, a gastrostomy tube. So can you tell me what difference or what positive benefits having the tube placed for your health and well-being?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to function whatsoever without the tube, because my the muscles in my throat, we found out, are just, they kind of go the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially when I try to drink fluid, my body doesn't really like it and just pushes it out. So without the tube, I'd be dehydrated all the time. And during the period where I was trying to work out if I could drink, if I couldn't before the tube got placed, I was in a lot of pain because of the dehydration, and I always had a headache. Mm-hmm. I was generally quite cranky to be around, which I'm sure was not great for anyone else that had to talk mm-hmm. to me. But generally, it's been an incredible help, because, again, I wouldn't be able to function, let alone mm-hmm. even think about start uni or finish mm-hmm. high school, college.
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't be feasible if I didn't yeah. have one.
Oh, great. Well, thanks, Olivia, for sharing that with us. Andrew, we've heard from Olivia about her experience being 16 and having the idea of a feeding tube placed. So could you tell us a bit more about when the idea of having a feeding tube was introduced to you ahead of your treatment?
I think, listening to Olivia, I think I probably benefited from the fact it was a bit of a blur and more fast-paced. So where Olivia had time to sort of ponder upon it, I think mm-hmm. from the prognosis of having cancer and then the sort of remedial actions that were to take place therefrom, all happened so fast mm-hmm. that I didn't have a great time, luckily, to ponder upon things. So everything mm-hmm. happened at a fast pace and was sort of slotted in one thing after another. What I found was really useful was the packages. So the information package that explained everything and all the contact numbers and exactly what was going to happen, I thought was very, very useful. The good thing, reflecting back, was I was always taken aback and pleased about the honesty I was surrounded by. So mm-hmm. even prior to having the peg fitted, people said, this is going to hurt. So mm-hmm. nothing was dressed up. And that was great, because I appreciated that honesty. And you went in with eyes wide open and there were no surprises, and you know exactly what was going to happen. And lo and behold, it did. Mm-hmm. I always felt that there was somebody on hand to either talk to or listen to for advice, and also give me tips before things actually happened. Give me tips on things that could have happened potentially, though I could then circumvent them with the actions they suggested would help. Prior to having the peg fitted, I went in and knew exactly what was going off. And actually, I have to say, it was fairly straightforward.
It sounds like, Andrew, and I think it's reflected in what Livy had said as well, you both really benefited from honesty and really straight talking from the professionals involved to give you a kind of a true insight into what to expect.
Oh, 100%. And it was the fact they're so bluntly honest is great, because for me as a person, I can deal with that. And I prefer that sort of level of talking. And it's the, and straight away that instigates a level of trust in the people that are dealing with you immediately. So you're off to a great footing straight away.
Yeah. I found that I really appreciated it, especially because I am so young, doctors don't really like talking to me, like putting it how it is as much as I'd find that I do now when I'm in adult services. So it was really appreciative that they did just sit me down and talk to me like I was an adult.
Mm-hmm. So Andrew, would you say that you used your tube a lot as part of your recovery?
It became my little friend. initially, I have to be honest, initially, all the natural human instincts say you're very self-conscious. You've got this tube sticking out of your belly, and you're more self-conscious than other people are for you. Because I introduced my friend to my family and showed everybody. And I think that was a bit of a hurdle, a mental hurdle to overcome from my part, and just say, so when I was going through feeding methods in terms of in the kitchen, I'd take myself away and have dinner by myself in the kitchen. But if somebody came in unannounced, they weren't surprised. You know, we'd make a joke of it. And as I'm pouring liquid into my tube, I'd say, I'm just having tea at the moment. And it became just a bit of a joke. So it wasn't something to be too self-conscious about. I think that initial worry was quickly overcome. And to answer your question, I used it all the time, because the fact I had throat cancer from the biopsy onwards meant the constriction of my throat. I couldn't take in food stuff at all. So the use of the tube was invaluable. And it's only by the use of the tube that actually a sustained health throughout my treatment. And it enabled me to get through treatment and out the other side.
Mm-hmm. I like that reflection, Andrew, that it became your little friend. And I could see Olivia smiling there as well. I guess the feeding tube became part of a new normal for you both. And it's something you adapted to and adapted your life to having this feeding tube. Is there anything, I'll bring this question to both of you, Olivia, I'll bring you back in at this point. Is there anything that you know now, now that you have the tube and you're living with it, is there anything that you would, you know, you wish you had have known before that you know now and that you might wish to share with some of our listeners?
People don't care. Like something, especially as already like self-conscious 16-year-old, I was very worried about, oh, well, I'm going to go back to school and do PE. And especially when I did have my nasal gastrostomy, I'd just gone back into year 11 after COVID. And I was so stressed out and so worried about, well, everyone's going to stare at me and everyone's going to, you know, not really want to talk to me or not ask questions. And when I got there, I very, very quickly realised that nobody really cares. Mm-hmm. Nobody was really, because obviously you get a look, people are interested, people might ask questions, but nowhere near the amount that I was like gearing myself up to experience. I thought I was going to be getting stares and just kind of hear whispers behind me all the time. And I really wish I knew how little, like people see it once and be like, all right, cool. Anyway, moving on. Like people really don't care as much as I thought they would.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, can you come in there and share some of your kind of learning points after having your feeding tube and any kind of reflections of things that you wish you had known that you know now?
Yeah, I can support what Olivia says totally. I think you initially overcome I think you've got to be brazen about it and just introduce it initially to those immediately around you, which I did to family and even friends and in-laws, and because everybody knows that knows you understands what you're going through. And then so my attitude was, do you want to see it or not? Because I'm quite happy to show you it if you want to see it, and just see. And people like in-laws were I think people are fundamentally nosy, aren't they? So they want to have a look. And when you show them it, there's no great big deal about it. I even went while swimming with a T-shirt on, admittedly over it, but once a T-shirt got wet, and we were in a crowd of people that didn't know me, and it was fine. It wasn't a problem. Also, the ingestion from the stoma site, some of the stuff that comes out, I think initially you go, "Ooh, well, what's that?" So I think it's probably the first couple of times it happens, you sort of a little concerned that, is this correct? Is this right? But the healthcare professionals quickly put my mind at rest for that. Mm-hmm. And said, don't worry about it, that'll just happen right the way through. Mm-hmm. The rest, I have to say, that there were no great surprises. And I think that's testament to the information you're given beforehand. Like I say, both from the instructional book and also verbally from the people around you. I think the amount of information you received was more than enough for you to be able to cope with what was about to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Andrew. I think you've shared some really useful reflections there, and everyone finds something that works best for them, and that's a really important message that both of you have shared. So Andrew, I think it's important, as we acknowledged in the introductions, you've now had your feeding tube removed. So first of all, congratulations, and I'm sure you're really pleased with your progress. So I just wanted to just check in and see how you're feeling now that the feeding tube's been removed.
It's a big event. It's something that you lose your little friend. You lose all that thing that becomes part and parcel of your bodies. Mm-hmm. And the actual function of removing the tube is straightforward. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the stoma recovering straight afterwards, it literally is days. The way to describe it, I think, is probably having grazed your leg or your arm, something mm-hmm. like that. And when that scabs over, and then initially you go through that sort of itching period. And then once that's overcome, literally within a couple of days, that is fine. Mm-hmm. You forget it's there.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful, Andrew, to kind of hear those experiences of having the tube removed as well, and realizing that it was such an important part of your recovery and important part of your life, and now it's adapting to your new norm of not having the tube, I guess. So we've covered a lot there, and I think it's been really helpful to hear both physical implications of having a tube placed as well as the emotional implications, because we know it's such a big change in your life having a feeding tube placed. And it'd be really helpful for us to kind of bring in a couple of sentences, if you had to share your greatest wisdom or your best advice for anybody who is considering having a feeding tube placed, or who has just had one placed and shares a lot of those feelings that you were having back at that time, what would you say?
It gets so much easier, because at the time, I know for me personally, it was the biggest thing in the world, and I didn't want to tell my friends for a very, very long time, because I didn't want them to know that, in my mind, that I'd taken a step back, because especially because I had a tube, got rid of it, and now I had to get one back again. In my head, that it was a massive step back, and it's really, really not, and it took me a very long time to realize and I accept the fact that it's not a step back at all. It saved my life, it saved so many people's lives, and it's not stepping back, it's stepping forward into, I'm gonna be healthy now. And sometimes it is the best thing for you to actually get to the point of health there, and gives you what you need.
Thanks, Olivia. And Andy, if we had to ask you for your best words of advice for anyone in a similar position that you had been when the tube feed was introduced to yourself, what advice would you give them?
I think it sounds a bit of a cliche, but I would embrace it. I think it's use it as just another tool in your armory, along with the medicine you're undergoing through treatment. It's another tool in your armory to get through what you're having to deal with to mm-hmm. come out the other end. Mm-hmm. So embrace the use of the tube. I mean, I can only talk positively about it because it allowed me to sustain enough nutrition throughout treatment whilst I couldn't orally ingest mm-hmm. to get through until I could start orally taking liquids and food for me to recover fully. And here I am now. So embrace it. Don't worry about it. There are enough professionals in normal hours, out of hours, and phone numbers for your contact and direct contact for you to be supported all the way through the use of the tube. So for me, I look back on it fondly and say, actually, that helped me recover and get through all the treatment I had and get to the other side.
That's great. It's really nice to hear those reflections from both of you. And hopefully it'll be helpful for someone who's listening and who's maybe apprehensive about having a feeding tube placed. As we know, everyone's journey is different. So some people may have their tube long term and others may have their tube short term, like yourself, Andy. So it's really useful to hear it from both of your perspectives today. So that brings us to the end of the podcast. I just want to say a massive, massive thanks to both of you for joining us today and bringing such enthusiasm and some little anecdotes, which I'm sure our listeners will really find benefit from. So before we sign off, any last words from yourselves?
From me, I'd just like to thank everybody that supported me all the way through treatment, and include mm-hmm. yourself, Helen. All them times where you made me get on the weighing scale and they were dreading it. You made me take the tins of beans that I'd hidden in my pocket out of my pockets so I couldn't cheat. But no, seriously, I'd like to thank everybody that supported me. And I know probably Olivia will say the same. Without the help and support I had, I wouldn't have coped quite as well as I did. So thank you. Thank you very much, everybody.
I mean, I was going to say something a lot less sentimental, but I like your answer better. I think my last thing would just be talk to people and mm-hmm. don't feel worried about asking for help or just wanting to talk about it. It's normal mm-hmm. and it makes it so much easier to cope. And I don't think I would have coped as well as having to get a tube again if it wasn't for all the like support that I had around. So. Big thanks to that as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks very much, and thanks for joining us on episode 3, and we hope that you will join to listen on future episodes. Thank you very much.
To keep up to date with future episodes of this podcast series from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more updates on the show, plus lots more resources and help on tube feeding, please visit nutritiahomeward.co.uk.